Can we get this podcast done?
Jesus. You knew Christ. That or you know that? What's the difference between you knew? Like, what? Have you forgotten that you know? Like, I don't understand what I knew and I know. What
Meanwhile, back on the range, the Lone Ranger disguised himself as a pool table.
More fun than a room full of wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast. Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Well, howdy, folks. Thank you for joining us, Outdoor Journal Radio, the podcast. Angelo Viola, Peter Bowman, Volva, Nick, and Dean.
Come on now.
Now, Dean today will be joining us visually.
OCD, on camera Dean.
On camera nice. Dean. And there he will be right there.
Right here.
Forevermore.
Look at him.
He will be
in handsome bastard he is, eh?
Oh, my God. And he will be emblazoned in your psyche.
Emblazoned. I love that. Emblazoned. There's a t-shirt there. You know, you got to I'm emblazing.
Why are you not looking at him over there?
Because I know where Dean actually is. It was just, see, this is like TV, everybody. Like, we're not on the river when you see the show on the river. You know,
God,
you know what I'm
Almighty,
saying?
Help me. So, help me.
I like to be
it
literal.
Is so hard to soar like an eagle.
I can't look at my buddy in the eyes. I need to tell him when I'm talking to, I can't talk to Dean like, hey, Dean, how you doing there? Hey, how you doing, buddy? And I know he's not there.
On today's program.
You don't know. I was looking at you, maybe.
On today's program, we will be joined a little later on by our good friend and Angler Hall of Fame inductee for a year now.
Yeah, he's baby.
Been, so last time we talked to him was Patrick Walsh I'm talking about, by the way. Last time we talked to him, he had just been inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Come on now.
Give me a hell yeah.
We want to know. We want to know a year later. We want all the goods. We want to know what it's been like. Being, you know, mobbed by a throng of fans every time he goes out of his house.
I like that editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief.
That's cool, in chief.
In other words, there's no disputing.
There's no disputing. Like, you know? Gordy is the fishing editor. Right. They have hunting editors. Right. They have camping. But he is the chief. He is the honcho. He is the man.
Nobody can say who's in charge around here.
Exactly.
You can't say that
That's
when
right.
you have editor-in-chief.
When they come here and they see your title, what's your title?
Oh, my God.
Your title
it depends.
Is,
am I taking the garbage out at the time you see me?
You
or am I
washing,
the washrooms? What
Nick.
Am I?
Yeah, wash the God. Washrooms. Okay, doke. Okay, here we go. I'm going to look at Dean now.
I'm going to be, hey, I want to be the chief.
Dean, where's the button for that right there?
I want
a bunch of bullshit.
Thank you.
I want to have that moniker. I want to be something. In chief.
I'll give you the two. Give me some time, but I got something
sure
I can give you.
I'm sure you'll
I'll figure that
something.
One out. Don't you worry.
Oh, I'm sure. That's right up your alley. I'm sure. Next week, the Toronto Sportsman Show. Next week, the Toronto Sportsman Show. And you'll be able to meet Patrick Walsh. I'm sure he'll be there.
Figure.
I know we'll be there.
I know our podcast network team will be there.
In glorious color, we will be there.
Yeah. We're going to be there. All our groups and doing live, or not live, but recorded podcasts from the show. So kind of live feel to it. But
yeah, if you're in the GTA or anywhere, well, if you're going to the show, make sure you pop in and say hello if you're listening to this podcast. We will have all kinds of goodies there too. I can't
Come
divulge.
On.
No.
Really?
No.
Come on.
No.
You can't be
Come
saying
on,
that.
Now.
Why are you saying
no.
that?
No. I cannot divulge any more than that.
I know that I was talking to one of our podcasters, and he was, I don't even know if I can say this, but he's trying to get some swag together to sell at the show as well. So I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but that'd be pretty cool,
You
too,
will
right?
be able, for all you folks who have been saying that, you know, you'd buy the merch, like this wonderful, by the way, what do you think of this? This is the latest piece.
Give me a hell yeah.
The latest piece.
I love it. It's just a basic t-shirt with
nice.
Branding on the front.
Just nice.
That's it.
It's for those times where you just, you know, want to say,
well, you're touching
hey.
That. I don't, well, you're touching that is nice. I'm not going to say that's nice.
Ooh,
I'm going to say
my.
Them are nice. I'm not going to say that is nice.
What was I thinking? Oh yeah. So yeah, we'll have our stuff there. And for those of you who do not like paying,
shipping,
you just come to the Sportsman Show and get Hello. It without shipping.
Hello.
Just pick it up and take it with you. Hell, pick it up and put it on and wear it at the show.
Come on now.
That's a give me a hell yeah.
Give me a hell yeah.
That for sure deserves a hell yeah. Good job.
I think we should put that board right here and you and I can do it.
You don't like Dean's proficiency at that, do you?
His reflexes. No, I just think it loses something. Dean, correct me if I'm wrong.
I think I do a fine job with this thing.
Give me a hell yeah.
Come on now.
I only have so many buttons.
He thinks he does a fine job if he does say so himself, and he does. Obviously,
he just did. So obviously,
where are we?
I like you, Dean. No matter what he says about you.
Come on now.
There you go.
anyways, the store. Yeah, we were talking about the store. So if you don't want to pay shipping, come to the Toronto Sportsman Show next week. We will be there Wednesday, or Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. If we're not there, we'll be at the Ontario Tourism booth with our good friend Carol Caputo.
Carol.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell That's yeah. Right. For sure.
And, with Carol. So either or, we're not far from each other booth wise. So make sure you pop in and say hello. Mm. Hello there.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Listener feedback, Mr. Bowman.
From Surfing Fireman, in response to the 2023 Miramichi Striper Cup episode, which just aired recently.
Right.
Correct.
Yes. You're doing good. You're doing good.
You want me to read this?
You're doing good.
You were telling me you wanted to, but
sure, let's. I'll take it because then I can kick you in the groin area.
Oh!
So, the listener.
You ever kicked a man in the groin before? You ever done that as a kid?
As a kid, yeah.
Like, without even hesitation.
Oh, it was a daily thing. Gary Cuthbert.
Oh, my God, Gary. Poor Gary. I feel for you, buddy.
Surf and Fisherman wants to know. Says, I've asked in the podcast comments a couple of times now and never got a response. That would be Dean's fault.
Yeah, I think that was at me.
Come on now.
That would be Dean's fault.
Come on now.
See, you got to tell him to be there. it's insanity.
We don't need the sound effects. This, you know, Dean probably, he's got a lot of shite on his plate right now. So he
got a notebook open. Yeah. I've got all kinds of stuff
so
over
again,
here.
He probably,
he's got to hold his mic.
What you should do, Dean, is just forget, put him in. If I say it, just let it go.
Yeah.
Don't even do it.
See?
That's awesome.
Oh my God, help me.
Fantastic.
God help me. Anyways, where was I? So it goes on here. I've asked the podcast, made comments podcast a couple times, but nobody responded. But I saw it in a recent episode. On the podcast, the boys' language tends to get a little bit colorful, especially Pete.
Uh-huh.
Come on now.
There you go.
Wrong one, sir.
That's okay. That's good. I was wondering how often you had to bleep or edit some words on the TV show. Because on the TV show, obviously, we have some restrictions that we have to, you know, guide ourselves with.
Yes.
This episode was the first time that I actually noticed a bleep on the Fish in Canada show. And it was Pete, of course.
He just had to put that in there, of course, didn't he? Eh?
He just
surfing fireman
himself. He cannot help himself. That's just the way it is. I have to take him every place twice when we're out, you know, visiting people. I have to take him every place twice. The second time, in order to apologize.
That's correct.
Because he's a very foul-mouthed young man.
Because Reverend Viola here never swears.
I didn't say I never swear. I have a little more control.
So let me answer surfing fireman as best I can. Surfing fireman. There is no doubt in my mind that I am a swearer. I have been and I always will be. And I don't care. It's just the way my dad was a swearer. I hear swear. When I worked construction, all we did was swear all day long, every day. So it's just part of the game.
It's not part of the game.
In part of my life. It's part of the game. It's part of my game. All right. In a normal fishing episode where we are mic'd up and on camera, I have learned to turn off the switch. That's why you rarely hear a bleep on the show, because it doesn't happen. When him and I get out there on that boat, we rarely, when the camera's rolling, if ever, we rarely swear. We know how to shut it off somehow or other. On that Miramichi show, if you remember correctly, the camera wasn't in our boat. The camera was in another boat. We had two guests in our boat. So it's almost like the camera's not around. So it's like a free-for-all. We don't know if it was shooting or not. You know, so I want to say son of a bitch, I say son of a bitch or whatever. You know what I mean? Just kind of do it. And that's what happened that time. I got dinged by a fish's fin. I got finned by a fish. And I called it a bastard. I said, "Oh, bastard," or something like that. And I don't know if we have to bleep that now, but if we do, we do. We don't, we don't.
Since when we bleep on this show?
I think we have in
once
the
or
past.
Twice.
We have in the past, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then, and we actually found one from Uncle Angelo too that we got to edit out of there because Uncle Angelo again
there's
was
no
the,
proof of any of that.
Oh, there's, I did there's not, a lot of proof of it. It's just a matter of nobody else gets to see it, but. Right. Because the camera wasn't on our boat, so we
listen. At the end of the day, what Pete is trying to say is that our
we're professionals,
consummate professionals, and therefore on TV, we have built this mechanism that we just don't do it, no matter what happens.
You know, it's harder to do on television. I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm going to be 100% honest and transparent with our audience. It's harder to hide our cigars when we're having a cigar than it is swearing because you're having a cigar between, you know, when we're having a little break and all of a sudden a fish bites. Oh, my God, we got to put down a cigar or something like that. So that's a tough one for us.
Why do you think I put, you know, that hard rubber flooring on FNC1?
Exactly.
As tired as the burns on the carpet.
It's a 20-foot ashtray. The whole thing's an ashtray.
No. Now, for you kids watching, no, we have the odd cigar.
The odd cigar. We're not going to deny it. But,
no. And whiskey once every once in a while.
Not on the boat.
Never. Never.
No, you didn't. There's not going to happen. So.
But at the end of a long day.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there's
Are
nothing.
You kidding me?
I don't think there's anything more satisfying than to do exactly that.
A cold beer is the best.
Give me a hell yeah.
I got that from Mr. Volva even this year. But Mr. Volva finally succumbed to it and said, "Pete, you are right. There's nothing better than a cold beer after a day on the boat."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I did not. I wasn't there, obviously.
You don't have to be there for everything. Do you need to be to micromanage everything here? Everything? Yeah. Even the wording?
Clearly, I don't micromanage enough, obviously.
I'm going to call you Mike.
I need to micromanage my micromanaging. That's what I need to do.
So anyways, I hope we explained that well enough.
I think so.
I think so.
We try our best. We do the best we can.
Yeah.
Podcast network highlights, Mr. Bowman.
Yes, from Diary, our latest from Diaries of a Lodge Owner, episode 33. It might not be the latest when this comes out, but it was the latest that I listened to. Mm-hmm. I haven't quite finished it yet, but it's really good. It's called Into the Fire with Mackenzie Rosen. It's all about he's a firefighter in BC, and I'm going to tell you something. Have you listened to it yet?
Not yet,
dude. It is unbelievable. Like, first off, this guy is so well spoken. Like, he's just like, oh my God, you need to be doing more than just fighting fires, because he could be articulates so well. Mm-hmm. But these procedures that they have to do for these fires from start to finish, from training people, getting those people after a very short boot camp into the bush, the getting water up hills, because they got to fight fires up hills and all that. It's really, really, really cool listening to what these guys, I guess, and girls all do. These firefighting team has to do, and it's a very interesting podcast that opened my eyes up. I know they work hard. There's no doubt about it. And he says that in there. You're in for some long days, but some of the procedures they do, crazy. It's really good, really good.
That's episode 33 of Diaries of a Lodge Owner. Our good friend Steve Nedzwicki is the podcaster on that.
We got a Stevie out in them bushfires. We got to get him out there putting them out. Could you imagine? Peter, I'm tired.
It's called Into the Fire with Mackenzie Rousen.
Come on now.
Don't delay. Get on.
Check
there
it out.
Right
it's good. It's really good.
In the news on fishingcanada.com, in the news on fishingcanada.com, in case I said new on fishingcanada.com.
No, you said it correctly.
Sometimes
I have to check. You're micromanaging yourself.
Well, I do that a lot, by the way. I do that a lot.
Okay.
Have you ever done that where you know you know what you just did is right, but you have a sneaking suspicion that it wasn't, so you have to backtrack.
Every day of my life, bud. Did I lock my truck at one of the houses? Not beep, beep, boom. And then do it about four more times through the night, just in case the elves knocked your buttons up or something like that. Good God.
In the news on fishingcanada.com, this hasn't been in the news for a while. For a while, it was... There was another tournament cheater, an organizer gone rogue. There was always something about tournaments, but then for a while we had none, and here we go, back in the tournament business again. Tournament fisherman disqualified after failing a lie detector test.
Oh my.
You got that right, George.
First of all, these lie detector tests, before we get on to this, because obviously this has a lot to do with the story, but they're not 100%. They can't be 100%.
I don't think I've ever heard claim where these are 100%. Everybody says, no, they're not 100%, but you know what I mean? So
what are they there for if they're not 100%?
That's a great question.
Why are they using them?
That's a great question. Because if they're using this, they should be 100%. Absolutely.
Dean, would this be a deterrent maybe? A deterrent tool to...
Yeah, I don't know. Stop. For me, I feel like it would scare me enough where it would seem like I'm lying. Like, as soon as you hook me up to that, I'm going to be nervous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, me too. Like, I know it.
That's the first thing you think of, right? Apparently not. Apparently, it's pretty rare that just being nervous is going to give you a false positive.
Mm. Especially when they start out with, sometimes they'll go half an hour to an hour of questioning before they even get to the real question, just to calm you down. Talk about your daily life. Talk about this and that. Right? But still, as soon as they got to, did you cheat?
No.
You know what I mean?
All right. So let's tell the story, and then you decide on whether, in this case, the polygraph was accurate, not accurate. So it was a great bluefish tournament. In fact, it's the biggest bluefish tournament on Earth, apparently. It's called the Great Bluefish Tournament on Earth, the greatest. 41 years old. So it's a well-established tournament. And this boat weighed in the first and second largest two fish of the event. But because there was a rule in place, and I'm sure that the tournament guys all had to sign this in advance, that the top first and second positions were going to be put through a polygraph.
And third, in this case.
And third. We're going to be put through a polygraph. So if you're planning on winning, I just want you to know we're going to check you out. We don't trust you right off the bat. So I just want that. That's kind of the message, and I'm sure they all signed for it. Well, lo and behold, the first and second place positions were held by one team, and they were put through the lie detector.
Was it one team or was it two teams?
I believe they're on the same boat.
Same boat.
Really? Okay.
But, yeah.
Wow.
Same boat. So,
same boat, two fish.
Two fish, first and second, same boat.
Which you could be iffy in itself, right? You could say, oh, everybody's going to cheat. That's a possibility too, right?
But there were more than just them on the boat.
Yeah, there was a full boat full. There was a captain and all that.
Yeah. So you got a lot of people. But anyways, this one boat weighs in the first and second biggest fish. And so they have to, after the ceremony or before, I don't even know how they would do this, but. Anyways, at some point, they had to sit down and do the lie detector test. Well, one of the fellows that they hooked up to the machine failed the lie detector test. So, automatically, I don't even know. Do you know, Dean, was there a period of time between when they got this and when they announced it?
I believe they actually both said they got a letter in the mail. So, they had claimed their money. And 2 weeks after, they got a letter in the mail saying, you failed.
Wow.
So both of them failed. First and second place, both failed the test.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. But anyway,
so they get the letter.
They got the letter.
And that says you got to pay us back or you don't get your money or whatever. So now third place in that tournament moves into first place.
And fourth moves into second, et cetera, et cetera. So it moves everybody up. Right
now, do they have to do lie detector tests now?
Oh,
is there first and second?
It's a little late for that, isn't it?
Well, nobody's really got the prize money yet. Now the prize money's up, in limbo here, so they could do that again. Okay, you won, so now you got.
However, according to the tournament rules, anglers below third do not have to take a line. So technically, I'll figure this one out. So the third original third place finisher, he moves up to first. I'm assuming that he's going to have to take the test or did take the test.
That's what I was just saying.
But the second place guy who was fourth doesn't. Now go figure that one out. Meanwhile, the top two were disqualified because of it and have to pay it back. Like, this is a mess.
That's a mess.
This is
especially
a bunch
if
of
team
bullshit.
Number four actually
it's
did
a
cheat.
Bunch of bullshit.
Yeah,
that's right.
If team four did cheat, they're sitting laughing. They're sitting there.
He could be the only cheater.
Boy, did we do a good job here. We suck, but we did good.
Anyways, the full story is on fishingcanada.com. You want to read it, because as you're going through it, you're saying to yourself, oh my God, I can see potentially that this could turn into just a nightmare from a legality standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I could see three or four different lawsuits here.
Oh my God, yeah. And in the story, when you get in there, you're going to hear from a forensic scientist on his opinion of polygraph tests, et cetera, et cetera. Are they real? Are they not? You know, or should you trust them? So
it's a
good article. It's a good read.
It's that part I found tremendously interesting, because I would take that one statement and I would take it to a lawyer.
You're damn straight I would.
And I would say, okay.
Especially what he says in this article. If you go there and you read this one quote, he says, whoop.
You got to read it, because apparently there is a high enough probability that there could go, things could go wrong when you're taking these tests. And I'm talking about nerves and all kinds of stuff that could kick in and make
that. I wonder
that,
if they're just going to get rid of them eventually, because it doesn't,
if it's not 100%,
yeah.
If it's not 100%, I say you can't rely on it. No, they don't use them in a court of law that reason.
They don't use them in a court.
But they will use it pre-court, I guess. They will use them to determine whether the witness and or defendant can even go into court and make that statement, right? So they'll kind of use that as a judgment, say, well, I don't know. The polygraph says he's lying.
Right.
So maybe we shouldn't even waste the time putting him up there.
Interesting.
You know? But they will not use him in a court of law because of this exact reason.
Exactly.
They're not
100%. It's so not it's like DNA is 100%, right? Yeah, DNA is 100%. Yeah. This is not. Huh.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah. There you go. All on fishingcanada.com.
Come on now.
Now, fan question of the week.
Fan question submitted by Cole Murray from British Columbia via email info@fishingcanada.com in case anybody wants to send a beautiful question like our friends from British Columbia.
What are you talking like that for? What the hell was that?
It's a bunch of bullshit.
Oh my God. Thank you, Dean.
In this question, Cole asks, is there a difference in northern pike feeding behaviors in northern BC, which we've done a couple of times, a couple of different lakes,
yes,
as opposed to northern pike in Ontario, in the Ontario regions, or does it depend on each lake? And that's a great question. We haven't put a whole lot, as I just said, we've only been to two lakes in BC that we fished pike.
Feeding behavior. He wants
right.
to know. Not, feeding pike behaviors. Nothing other than feeding behaviors. So I would say a pike is a pike is a pike.
Same with me.
And it is going to probably be similar. Doesn't matter where it is in the world. I think a pike cannot shed its stripes. It is a pike. So it, I've always thought pike, and I don't even know whether this is politically correct anymore.
Ooh,
in today's world.
My, here we go.
I always thought the pike was demented. Of all the fish, of the entire fish family.
I think sometimes you're demented when you say something.
I always thought that they were a little bit off. Pike are a little bit off.
I don't know. Why would, okay, now I got to get
I'll
into your
you
brain
why.
Here on
I'll
that one.
I'll tell you why. Because when a pike wants to eat, it will eat.
Mm-hmm.
But when a pike doesn't want to eat, it, like, you can do whatever you want, and it is not going to eat. You can see it. You can touch it. You can feel it. You can hand feed it. You can do whatever you want, but it says no.
Well, you just described a muskie as well. For sure. Oh, come on.
Not as bad.
When a pike is all over you, or a muskie, he's more so than a pike all over you because he will bite at the boat 90% of the time.
How many times have we fished right over top of giant pike? And you see him. He's right there. You can't miss him. You're in 6 feet of water, eight feet of water, crystal clear. It's sitting there. And you dangle your dingle right all around him. And the son of a gun, he won't budge.
Dangle your dingle. Right? I love it.
He won't budge.
No, that happens.
So they're kind of weird that way. And
But let's go into it a little bit more in depth. Now that we have the advent of live scope, we're putting stuff in front of lots of fish that aren't doing a thing. They're just like, what? You know, why are you not biting? Why are you not eating this? There's something wrong here. So maybe a fish is a fish is a fish. But I don't know.
I think they're off.
I think
pike are off a little bit. They're insane.
To me, pike sort of segregate from small to big in a very huge way, and that the small ones, even in BC lakes, and we don't know this for a fact, is that those small ones stay shallow for a long time. Those big ones, they go shallow to spawn. They stay shallow until the food source is basically gone, and then whoosh, they go out to that cooler, deeper water. Big pike are, most people don't realize that, but big pike do like deep water around them, cool water around them. Now, that may be because of bait fish. It might be because of whitefish, cisco, herring, whatever it may be. But if you look, and I think they're very individual fish, big pike. I think they go in, they spawn together, they're scarred up, they do all this stuff, all it looks like a big group, and then all of a sudden they go out in the main lake, and we've noticed, again, on our fish finders, that you'll see one big, long fish out there in the middle of the lake, and it's a pike. If you catch it, it's like, wow, that was a pike. That's so cool. So I think they would do that in BC, Ontario, and anywhere. It's those lakes in BC, especially, those are perfect lakes for fish to go out off the shallows. That Lake Trout Lake in what was that last lake we fished there? What was the name of that? Airplane Lake.
And
that was a perfect example where they can go out and even feed on lake trout if they're, you know, if they're shallow enough.
Pretty much anywhere they use, you can describe that in any lake, I think. Mm. But the bottom line is they're demented. That's really the truth of it. Cole Murray.
Sorry, Mr. Pikeys.
Cole Murray. No, I love them. You know that. I love pike fishing. Pike fishing is one of my favorite, but they are different. They're off.
We did put out an article actually a few weeks ago.
We didn't contradict anything that article. No. Okay.
It's about that they may actually have the claim out there that they're fishing like the purest form of pike. Because we put out an article on the Canadian origins of pike not long ago where the oldest record of a pike is in Alberta, and then they migrated this way. So a lot of people think of them as like an Ontario species, but they originated out there. So
wow,
See, that's interesting.
We put that out.
Yep.
Wow. Was I part of that, or did I just
you read it over?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
you proofed it.
Speaking
of demented,
God, they're a little bit off. That's all.
Cool fish, but I love them.
Thank you, Cole Murray from British Columbia. Via email submitted that question.
Thank you, Cole Murray from British Columbia. Via email, info@fishingcanada.com. Thank you. There you go. I just want to do that voice one more time. A little more emphatic, maybe.
Demented. It's going to be a game changer.
No. Fishing will not be the same in Canada.
Hi, everybody. It's Toronto Sportsman Show time. And the entire Fishing Canada Outdoor Journal podcast crew is going to be there.
That's right. We'll be in-house hosting live podcasts, interacting with listeners, and fielding questions from you, our audience, all weekend long.
You can get 15% off your admission price by purchasing through the link on fishingcanada.com.
Spend a weekend with us at Canada's premier event for outdoor enthusiasts, the Toronto Sportsman Show.
Now, I've been listening. The humble goldfish, everyone's favorite aquatic pet. It's small, easy to care for. What's there not to love?
Even the cat may be mesmerized by the color and movements of your aquarium friends. Goldfish are great at home, but don't let them loose.
Releasing goldfish or other domestic aquatic pets or plants into natural environments is harmful to both your pet and the planet.
Goldfish disrupt ecosystems by outcompeting native species for food and resources in degraded habitats. They contribute to algae blooms, they kill aquatic wildlife, and pass viruses and diseases contracted in aquariums to wild fish.
They could even live up to 40 years and grow as big as a football. Anglers, this is where you come in. If you find a goldfish at your local fishing spot, report it to the invading species hotline or go online to eddmaps.com.
Remember to never dump your live bait into the water and risk spreading other aquatic invaders. Keep our lakes free from invaders and don't let them loose.
As the world gets louder and louder, the lessons of our natural world become harder and harder to hear, but they are still available to those who know where to listen. I'm Jerry Ouellette, and I was honored to serve as Ontario's Minister of Natural Resources. However, my journey into the woods didn't come from politics. Rather, it came from my time in the bush and a mushroom. In 2015, I was introduced to the birch-hungry fungus known as chaga, a tree conch, with centuries of medicinal use by indigenous peoples all over the globe. After nearly a decade of harvest, use, testimonials, and research, my skepticism has faded to obsession, and I now spend my life dedicated to improving the lives of others through natural means. But that's not what the show's about. My pursuit of this strange mushroom and my passion for the outdoors has brought me to the places and around the people that are shaped by our natural world. On Outdoor Journal Radio's Under the Canopy podcast, I'm going to take you along with me to see the places, meet the people that will help you find your outdoor passion and help you live a life close to nature and under the canopy. Find Under the Canopy now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's get to our special guest for the day. He was here about a year ago to the day, I'm told.
Well, yes, he was.
He was inducted into the Angler Canadian, Hall of Fame.
Canadian Angler Hall of Fame, absolutely.
And so here he is back again. We want to see how it's been a full year of being a Hall of Famer. Patrick Walsh, Editor-in-Chief of Outdoor Canada Magazine. Patrick, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing really great. How are you guys?
We're doing good, man.
Really great as well.
So a year goes by.
You walked the red carpet, you got your awards, and now a year's gone by.
I'm just back to being another schlub.
Okay.
Yeah, it vanishes pretty quick, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
It was nice to see you at this year's inductee ceremonies.
That's right.
Again, I can't, that was a good gathering.
I can't imagine. Like, the years are going by so quick. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Last time Patrick was on the program, it was episode 72. For those of you who like to go back in time and see what the previous interview was like,
there might be something that comes up in this interview that they might go back and say, "Hey, I should." We'll see. Now you watch. It might be a good reference that you said that. You know what I mean? It might be. It could be very insignificant, but it could also be. It could also be very, very prominent.
Absolutely.
In our lives.
You know? If I'm not mistaken, last time we were on the show, we also talked about the fact that you were, I believe, preparing to go to Plumber's Lodge. Did that happen?
Yes. Yes. And last July, I went up to Plumber's to Great Bear Lake Lodge.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And come on, talk to us about that, bud.
It was super hot up there. It was so strange.
Welcome to our lives. Yeah.
Sign of the times. And it's funny, you come out of your cabin in the morning and it's warm. The water was like glass. You could water ski if you wanted to.
Yeah.
But funny enough, once you get out in the water and you're moving, it's freaking cold because the water is still cold,
right,
but the air is warm.
Yeah.
It's very, what very interesting dynamic.
What did the air temperatures get up to, Patrick? You remember?
Oh, shoot. I have to check my notes, but I think we're pushing 30.
Oh wow!
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you remember the water temps, Pat, at all? Like throughout the day for with Slade?
Yeah,
you said,
that's
right?
In my note. That's in my notes. Also, you're throwing the hard questions at me.
Well, that's what we do, buddy. I'm gonna say, I bet you.
Yeah. There was the surface temperature was definitely pushing 60.
Yeah. I was gonna say in the 60s maybe.
So it's funny, those lake trout, as I'm talking to Gord Pizer, and he's writing about that upcoming issue of the magazine. They will leave their comfort zone of 48 and come up for a quick feed and then get back down.
Right.
Yeah. whatever they need to do, right?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Yeah. I think a lot of fish species do that, actually, to be honest with you.
Clearly, we don't have a new personal best lake truck to talk about, because you would have led off with
that. You'd have had a picture of that in front of them. Hey, everybody, look at me. I'm Bobby Dazzler.
Fate would have it, I did get my new PB Laker.
He's just not a bragger like us.
So previously it was 37 pounds. That was a calculation based on the length, girth, and width. Yeah. But this time we had a digital device to weigh it. Nice. And it was 42 pounds.
Dude.
That's my new PB Laker.
Holy crap. What'd you catch it on? Tell us the story. Trolling?
It was a T60.
Yep, big flatfish.
Just trolling, and fairly shallow, actually. They were coming up on this reef, I guess, to feed. So my guide, Reed Storyberg, had them dialed right in before we got there. So it's like my guide caught it. I held the rod.
he just dragged you around until he put it right in his mouth, right?
The bait. Exactly.
Could you guys imagine that if you dropped a nice underwater camera down there for a couple of hours in a day and the feeding time of all those big lakers coming on that shoal, like a 40 plus, there's probably 50s that go up there. There's lots of 20s and 30s that go up there. It would be insane down there. You know what I mean?
You didn't bring a camera with you, an underwater camera?
No.
Yeah, it would have been great.
I'm not fancy like you guys.
Oh, yeah, right. Look at you with the fancy Fishing Canada hat.
Yeah, catching 40-pound lake trout and all. Yeah.
No drone either. I watched your latest episode up in Esnagi, is it?
Yeah.
And you had some really cool drone footage for that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't tell Vova that. We're okay with that, but don't tell our cameraman that he'll want to race. Yes, he's,
I'm trying to cut back, Patrick. Yeah. You know what that's all about? Cut back. Speaking of cutbacks, I think we need to get into a little bit of the subject that we intended to talk to you coming on board. The print media, we talked about this on the last episode that you were on too. You know, it's obviously evolving, changing, shifting, whatever we want to call it. Has there been any dramatic change in the last 12 months since we talked in terms of how print is being consumed or displayed and or future outlook, anything?
For us, we're pretty much on an even keel. Carrying right on as we've been, touch wood. Yeah. Interestingly enough, Field and Stream, which had stopped its print publication maybe going on four years ago, they're relaunching a print product this year. They're going to go biannual, and they're making it more of a, they're trying to present it more as like a coffee table kind of magazine that you keep around. And it looks pretty slick. They've gone kind of retro with it, the covers. No cover lines. It's just like old illustrations, fishing and hunting. Looks pretty cool.
Yeah, they kind of, when they decided to go digital, total digital, that was a major event in the print industry. I mean, they were looked upon, it was almost untouchable. And when they made the announcement, it was like such a shock that something like that would happen.
Wow, yeah.
But here we are. Yeah. You know,
is Outdoor Life still out there? Do they still put a product out, or is it print?
It was retired at the same time Field and Stream.
Okay.
As of now, it doesn't look like it's coming back with a print product.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, those were our staples back in when we were kids, right?
Those two were. So, okay. Yeah. So we find ourselves kind of in the same boat.
Not just restricted to print media, what's going on.
No, I mean, we find ourselves in the same boat in that we're kind of the last man standing in our business, in our industry, right? In television.
Yep. Versus YouTube. Right?
And so we had a discussion about it not too long ago. We were trying to figure out, is this good or bad? You know, it's kind of a strange feeling. And I'm sure you're in the same boat. I mean, thankfully, we're both doing well, but it's kind of scary to be the last one up, you know?
And you know what? And the thing is, we can be hanging on and hanging tough right now, but in 20 years, when all of our our age group, all our people that consume TV and consume magazines, will these 20-year-olds of the future, will they even want anything to do with it? Because half of them don't want to have TVs and half of them don't want to go to the magazine store to buy a magazine, right? So they get it all online. So I don't know. It's going to be quite a future for both medias, I think.
Yep.
It's a really interesting time. I was just reading today. I still get the newspaper delivered to our door.
Me too.
Yes.
Ange needs an hour and a half.
Tactile quality of print media.
Ange needs an hour and a half on the shitter in the morning.
I can't start my day unless I touch newsprint. It's just
every day. Yeah.
Just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
So there was a story this morning about Vice Media. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They were in 2017, they were valued at, I think it was $3 billion. Now they're laying off 900 people.
Oh my God.
Having big financial troubles, and they had print, digital, television, the whole suite. So you just never know.
Wow.
And they were geared to the young people. So I don't know.
So you don't think
to know what's going on.
See, I was going to ask you that. You know, is it an age thing? Which I think it is. I think television and print. I think it's that older demo that just can't let go.
There are some, as in Mr. Taylor, our producer. Dean still likes print as well, but Dean reads a lot of novels as well too, right? And you know, physical novels, but he does like the magazine. Him and I were talking about this yesterday. As I'm old school, and I love looking at an Outdoor Canada magazine, In Fisherman magazine, something like that. Yeah. I still love that. Dean's the same way, but Dean probably is an anomaly. How old are you?
26.
26, right? Yep. So I bet you there's not a lot of Deans out there in that sense. But
I feel uncomfortable for sure about it. You know, but at the end of the day,
26.
Yeah.
Jesus. Damn.
I don't even remember being 26. Dude,
if I doubled that, I still got a long way to go. God. Oh, my God. Oh, well.
So it's a funny thing, the dynamic of what's going on in the media landscape. It's like, for us, it's not a lack of eyeballs of readers. That's not the issue. It's ad dollars migrating to digital.
Right.
And then some have both problems, but like Vice, it must have been an issue of losing viewership and readership because they had the digital sphere. But then again, a lot of the digital is going to the Googles and Facebooks. So,
Do you think it's manipulated? This migration from analog to digital in terms of media spend. I go through this all the time, right? I'm constantly trying to evaluate it because we have both. I mean, we're in a position where we can sit back and look at both financials, right? I can't help but think that it's artificially manipulated, meaning that it's not based on results necessarily, but it's just trendy. It's the thing to do. As a media buyer, it's, you know, either you're ordered to, or you need to, or you think that in order for you to do your job properly, you just have to shift your spend from traditional to digital more and more every day. And if, you know, looking at results and stuff, because once again, we look at both of them because we're in both of those arenas. I just think sometimes it's just the trendy thing to do. It has nothing to do on results. Because I got to tell you, I'll be honest with you, not that our digital is not performing well in terms of yielding ROI for our customers, but TV is still the superstar. I mean, honest to God, you can see it. You know, when an episode airs on Saturday, you see results on Monday. And you can pinpoint them to the television product because it's very specific to that episode. So I think we all kind of rushed and we're still, it's evolving. It's an ever moving target, but I just think we all woke up one day and said, okay, we have to move to digital. Everybody's got to go to digital.
Right.
I still think there's a huge, huge value to traditional media, such as newsprint, magazine, television, radio, they're still yielding results.
As you've discovered with your data, that there is, you do have an audience. Right. And you're right. It seems with the media buyers, it's very subjective, and I think it's what they're interested in, and they're, sorry, Dean, in their 20s.
Exactly.
Young people. And they're making these buy decisions for the clients.
Yep.
They're skewing digital. Even though we had this battle with print, we were measured previously by Print Measurement Bureau, that which turned into Vivid Data. And we had the highest readers per copy in Canada at one point. We had a huge readership, according to their research methodology.
Yeah.
But could we get the media buyers to look at this? No, they'd already made up their minds.
Exactly.
Isn't that funny? It's the same thing we go through. Yeah.
That's
hilarious.
Sad. I mean, you think about that statement right there, that's pretty sad. But
it's true.
Yeah.
I think
it's a disservice to the clients, to the advertisers.
Exactly.
If they only knew.
Yeah.
But you know what?
And you think about your audience, like our audience, they're dedicated anglers and or hunters. They're a niche audience that we're reaching.
Yeah.
And that's the guys that the advertisers want to reach. They don't need to reach anyone else that's not buying a fishing rod or a rifle.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't know. I wouldn't think so, but apparently that's not the case.
Yeah.
I joke, but
we have a thing here, Patrick. Dean says book sales are up 8.9%. Does that affect magazine sales in any way, shape, or form? Do you think people are?
I don't know if there's a correlation there. To tell you the truth, Pete, it's a nice sign, though.
Yeah. Right.
Unless those are Kindle kind of books, or are they actual?
No, I believe it's paper.
I think it is paperbacks. Paper? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's become trendy on Instagram and TikTok and stuff like that to post about books. There's a whole channel dedicated to that. So it seems like it's picking up steam as kind of a trendy thing to do right now.
Yeah. Which is good. Yeah, doesn't matter how they do it, as long as they do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool.
AI, is it affecting you? Has it come into your world yet? I know we're getting inundated by it.
Oh, yeah. He must get hit by it.
I hope not. I have to trust that my writers are not using it.
Well, do you check? Do you know? Do you even know how to check?
Not really.
Exactly.
That's true.
How do you know?
For those that maybe
there must be a way to check. I don't know. I guess you could take a sentence and put it on the web and see if it gets a match. But
That would be one way. Yeah.
They do make a detector now, like a chat GPT detector, where you can
Okay. There you go, Pat. You got to buy that now. There's definitely got to get that. So.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So let's just quickly analyze that, because it's going to affect us. If it hasn't affected us already, it's going to affect both of our worlds very soon. Is there anything wrong with it? And what is it? What is wrong with it?
I edited an article we got submitted that when I got halfway in, you could just tell this wasn't written from experience. And I think that's what we are doing, right? We're writing from experience, and that's what makes it important.
Right.
And when I got halfway in to the article we got sent, I was like, there's no way this person has ever done what they're talking about. And it ended up being a robot.
Okay.
So I think that's the problem. But
if you know the writer, I mean, Patrick's got specific writers that he's had for years, and I think you'd know their style, and he'd be able to sniff that out somehow or other if they were. But you know what? I mean, you look at even imagery nowadays, in Photoshop. So AI is huge in imagery nowadays too. You can generate almost anything in these pictures. And is it real or not? Well, does it matter? If that fish is the subject, if the guy holding a fish is the subject, and you put a tree in the background just for something back there or whatever, is it that big a deal or not? I don't know. I mean, Photoshop's gone on forever, right, Pat? I mean, I can guarantee you there's nothing straight out of the camera onto Pat's magazine without some kind of touch up in there, right? Sure. It has to be. It's just the way it is. There's a little sharpening here. There's a little color correction there, whatever. Yeah. It has to happen. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's not real right out of the camera to begin with. So how far can you go, and do people care?
There's some photo editing going on, but we don't embellish, like,
right,
put a larger fish in someone's hands, right, and what they caught, that kind of thing. But yeah,
no,
color correction.
It's like Andrew and I do with it on the TV show. Our editors could always put bigger fish on our.
Yeah, I always give him the bigger fish. But we touch up our stuff. I don't think it's a big secret. We have a whole color correction process in our post-production.
Huge.
You have to. You know, so really, is it any different than AI? I don't know.
Well, I think so, because with AI, it's not a person doing it. It's a computer program, mm-hmm, and it does lack that human element of, say, for example, you're writing about the latest trip. You're going to talk about your own experience, and that's something I don't think AI can impart.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, deeper insights and philosophies and stuff you want to weave through your narrative of your story or your show. As I can see it so far, AI is unable to do that, to give that kind of human element, that extra little bit.
Well, to Deed's point, you know, it hasn't experienced that particular story, right? It just,
right.
So it's hard, if you haven't experienced it, it's hard to sometimes capture the magic of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but from all accounts, AI is doing a pretty damn good job of it.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
Well, probably there's people that will do a kind of a melding of some AI and then mix in their own stuff.
Right. Right. But like that.
To me, it's just, I don't know, lazy.
Yeah. It's kind of too bad.
Writing,
I'll tell you where though, guys, I'll go back to the photography part of it. Where AI, I think, is very handy, and it's just more for workflow than anything else, is corrections and stuff like that, like cloning. So in Photoshop, you got to get rid of a telephone lines or whatever it may be. In that sense, you can, you know, you select your area, boom, you hit generate, and it generates it instantly for you, whereas you could take an hour or two to clone that same, do that same job because you didn't want that in there, you know what I mean? So it does, I think it has a good spot in certain aspects, but to generate a tiger behind you in Toronto or something like that, okay, that's not right either. So there is a use for it, and I think that, you know, the corrections, the clonings and stuff like that, to me, it's handy in that sense.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, beyond journalism, I guess there's all kinds of important applications for AI, especially in medicine and things like that. But in terms of creative arts, I don't know.
Yeah. It's evolving so quickly. As we're speaking, probably something else is already rearing its ugly head to take over from.
Can you imagine?
We interrupt this program to bring you the much anticipated bonus code for the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. This week's code is MAGAZINE. That's MAGAZINE, MAGAZINE. Just type that in the bonus code section of the contest and receive 100 free entries towards all our current giveaways. For those who haven't entered yet, what the heck are you waiting for? Head on over to fishingcanada.com while you listen to the rest of this episode. Click contests and sign up for all the latest Fishing Canada giveaways. And now, back to the show. Question for you. When you get a story sent to you, I'm assuming that a lot of the stuff that you print in Outdoor Canada magazine is submitted. Well, let me take it back. Maybe I shouldn't assume. Are all the stories that appear in an issue of Outdoor Canada magazine, are they commissioned by you, or do these stories sometimes just show up out of the blue and you say, oh my God, what a great story?
Yeah, well, as a policy, we say we do not accept already completed manuscripts.
Okay.
Mostly because we just don't have the time to read everything that comes over the transom. So our policy is send us a query, an email, briefly describing what your article idea is, where it would fit in the magazine, and why you're the person to write it. That said, I have received stuff, unsolicited manuscripts from people who aren't professional writers. They don't know any better.
Right.
And if I have time, I'll give it. I'll read the first couple of sentences. And once in a while, I go, oh, that's actually quite good. And keep reading and then go, you know what? I can work with this. And I'll reach out to the writer and work. I just edited a piece now from a young woman here in Ontario about just writing about the philosophy of hunting. It came in unsolicited and it was very good. And it's going to be in the next issue of the magazine.
Wow.
Amazing. Nice.
I don't know if you remember, Patrick,
that's the
or not.
Exception to the rule.
Yeah.
But I used to, in my early 20s when I was out of school, I used to submit articles to you probably every week for like 4 years.
and he turned you down.
I eventually got published in 2021. And then it pretty much 2 months after that applied here and got hired here. And I use that as like.
Okay, now that I'm connecting those dots now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So
full circle.
So if anybody gets published from Patrick, you might get a job at Fishing Canada after that.
Yeah. No. Or anybody who doesn't get published at Patrick's can come and apply here, because obviously our standards are much lower. So for any folks who are listening that, you know, are wannabe writers or aspire to someday be read in, obviously Outdoor Canada magazine is setting the standards pretty high if they're looking to be published in that magazine, but just publish in general. Is there anything that you can sort of give them that might help them develop a style or maybe a way of getting their foot in the door in the business?
Yeah, I think my best advice to anyone aspiring writer, especially if they want to write for periodicals and they have a specific periodical, magazine, newspaper, whatever in mind, is to study that publication, see what kind of stories they publish, what the style of writing that appears in that publication. And another thing is, if for a magazine, for example, don't swing for the fences. Don't pitch for your first pitch, oh, I want to write a 5,000 word story on X subject. Instead, look at magazines. They have all these little departments, some of them 100-word articles, 200 words. Look at those little bits, because those are also often the hardest parts of the magazine for the editors to fill. Right. And if you can fill that niche for them, then they get to know you. They get to know your writing style. And you get your foot in the door that way. Start small.
So start small.
I'd be a good one paragraph story guy.
Oh, you'd be the best.
I'd be pretty good. Hey, Pat, how's that working out for you? Oh, good, Pete.
All right, move on.
Let's do that. Okay.
You know, they say it's harder to write short than long.
Yes.
True. There you go.
That's very true. Yeah.
What about Pat? Can you say on a podcast or whatever? Is there obviously people get paid for this stuff? So is there
a standard?
Yeah. Is there a number? What can a person expect for a small little 500 word or 200 word? Is there a way can you even say that? Maybe you can't say it publicly. I don't know, but
yeah, a couple $100. It's our pay has stagnated. In fact, gone backwards. It's kind of, I guess, emblematic of the state of the industry right now in print, where time was we'd pay 50, 75 or $1 a word for articles.
Wow.
Back when we were flush.
Right.
You know, because of the struggles of the migration of ad dollars, we just don't have the editorial budgets we once had to pay that. And it's kind of a sad state of affair, because back in the 60s, top-notch writers were getting $1 a word in the late 60s, early 70s in magazines. And it never really grew from that. And consequently, it's very hard for magazines without a budget to attract, you know, name writers, quality journalist writers. And a lot of those guys, people are moving to corporate gigs, that kind of thing, to make a living.
You know, it's funny because we're much the same in our industry back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, mid 90s. It was a great industry. I mean, people were making good bucks, right? But it went it somewhere, and obviously it's easy for us just to point it at the internet, right? That's the easy thing to say happened. But something happened where it started going backwards, and you just use that same terminology, going backwards, and that's not. I don't think that's happening everywhere. Is it something that's just in the outdoors media, you think?
Oh, no. I would say it's in, certainly in the magazine industry. It's everywhere. I mean, you look at Rogers Media, for example, they were the king. They had McLean's, Today's Parent, all kinds of well-known magazines. And they've sold them all to other companies. And those magazines are certainly not as robust as they once. They were like, you're talking like 140, 100 plus pages. They're now, you know, 68, 72. Wow. It's the whole industry. It's not just the outdoors.
Okay. So it's just, it's.
And print too, for that matter.
And print. It's all print. It sounds like it's anything analog. Is that a trend? Is that a trend, maybe?
Yeah, no kidding. What about if Ange and I went out in beautiful Northern Ontario and we got the best picture of cougar in the world, beautiful mountain lion shot, submit it to you for a cover. What would a guy get for a cover image? Money-wise.
Oh, Sandra, our art director, it depends. I think she's paying now about $400 for a cover shot.
Okay.
So you're not going to get rich.
Yep.
I liked where you were going with that, though.
Yeah, cougar, you and I, cougar, huh? Sure. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm telling you right
That's
now.
That's why I went to mountain lion quickly.
I loved it. I'm disappointed it's only $400, but you know what? Sometimes you can't do it for the money.
I think I'd do that for free if I were going cougar hunting. No problem. It cost you a lot in the long run, that's for sure.
Speaking of hunting, we're on the cusp of another turkey season coming up, and I know you're a big turkey hunter. anything new in that?
Look at the sound effect.
It's perfect.
Ventriloquist over here. What's going on in that part of the hunting world?
No change, really. I although I do hope this year to join my publisher, Mark Yellick, out west to go after a Miriam's turkey.
What?
Expand my turkey horizons, get a different subspecies.
What is that?
Yeah, tell us about that.
Miriam's turkey? Well, there's five species of turkey in North America, and it's a goal for a lot of turkey hunters to get one of each, the turkey slam. The ones we have in Ontario are eastern turkeys, so I've had plenty of those. I just thought it'd be fun to try something different, hunt in a different geography. Yeah. It's all the same principles, at least for Miriam's, as it is for eastern. Their tail feathers are just a different color when they fan. It's the main difference you can tell between the two species.
And are they're just prevalent in the western provinces?
They're in Alberta and BC and for the most part, and then into the States.
Wow. Never even heard of them.
Yeah.
Western states.
Learn something new every day.
Would turkeys?
Yeah, otherwise, we've got plans. Our hunting and editor, Ken Bailey, is coming out again, and we hunt out Greenock Swamp area with our buddy Timmy. And then I have my traditional opening, turkey opener, with my good friend Rob Pye over at Watersheds Canada.
Nice.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. Good stuff. I was going to ask, can these subspecies of turkeys, could they interbreed or they stay totally away from each other? Could you get a cross?
I've heard of the Miriams and the Easterns having a hybrid.
Okay.
So I don't see why not.
Yeah. Right on.
Just like fish will mix up sometimes. So
sometimes. Not very often, but sometimes.
When's the next big fishing trip?
Actually, my wife and I are going down to Fort Myers on Sunday.
Good.
Nice.
I've got two charters booked.
What are you fishing for?
Sea trout, grouper, pompano, snook, and redfish, I believe. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm fishing for biters.
Spoken Good like point. The Patrick Walsh Good that I point. Know and love.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything going on in Canada? You doing any trips this coming year?
I don't have. Oh, yes, I am. I'm silly me. I'm following in your footsteps. I'm going to the Miramichi in October to try my hand at those stripers.
Good for man. You.
You're
going to
love it.
Yeah.
Love
it.
Oh, my God. It's going to be you've never done it before.
No. Oh, no, not stripers, just the salmon. God. So
you are going to absolutely fall in love with that fishery. I'm telling you. Yeah. It's going to be
It looks amazing. I'm really want to get them on top too. I'm going to be doing a fly fishing program with John Cleveland from Eppinger Lures. We've done a few trips together in the past. So
right.
He's a lot of fun to fish with. He's so knowledgeable.
Actually, we both said last October when we were fishing down there that a fly would have done really well when we were smashing on topwater baits.
Yeah.
Big, gaudy fly. Here's a little tip that I learned after the fact, right? So we were set up. We were shooting an episode. We were set up in a location. We were locked in with the trolling motor, and we were surrounded by big stripers. And so I think we're both using a topwater bait, or I was using a topwater bait. Pete was using just a subsurface bait. But anyways, I started finding out that if you just leave the bait in the current and just twitch it, right, the topwater bait, they'll come up and just smack it. But they weren't hitting. And you could see these big tails, eh, Pete, coming up and smacking at the bait. Like
the lure would fly in the air. The lure
was flying in the air, and I'm frustrating as hell. And you had to really, really, really work it a long time before you got a hookup. Well, I found out after the fact that what I should have been doing is that when they smack it with their tail, I should have let the bait drop back 5 or 10 feet, because what they're doing is that's how they feed, is they go into a ball of bait and they smack their tail and then drop back and pick up the ones that were stunned that are drifting down the current. But I was keeping it in the same spot, so those poor bass were smacking and saying, okay, what's going on here? How come this thing isn't dropping back? So remember that if you get a hit, if you get a hit, let it drop back a few feet, and apparently the fish will be right on it instantly.
We got some good footage, though. But you're doing that. We got some good footage of that. We got
some footage. Was just
and that water, Pat, was in the 40s, so 40 Fahrenheit, something like that. So don't be afraid if you're seeing 40-something degrees. I'm sure you're going to have a guide or something there anyways. But it was pretty amazing when we looked at that water temperatures and we thought, there's no way top water is going to work. And then all of a sudden, clonk, and they were just onto it. It was cool.
Yeah. So there's the big Striper Cup goes on in September, just a little earlier on. And it's spectacular, too, just to see all those boats out there pounding stripers. It's great, man. Have you been? You haven't been for the spring either, right? The spring run of stripers?
No.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. They have to obviously diversify their sport fishing offerings. The decline in salmon. So it's not a bad thing. The stripers are pretty amazing looking fish.
You're going to like it.
And by the way, make sure you sample some of it on the table.
Oh, yes.
When you're down there, because, oh, boy, you are in for a treat.
Yeah, it's good. Really good.
Absolute treat.
Looking forward to it.
Next magazine issue comes out when?
We're working on our May, June issue now, and it comes out mid-April.
Mid-April, available at all leading outlets that have your publication, print that you can touch and feel.
Yeah, baby.
And then it's got so many other uses. When you're done with it, there's tons of other things you could do with paper that you can't do without.
But do say.
I light my fires in my fireplace sometimes.
Well, as one angry reader once said to me, I'm using this to line my bird cage.
Birdcage. Wonderful. What are all the birdcage guys going to do without print? Patrick, always a joy to have you on the program. How can people follow you, get a hold of you? Where do they find you?
They can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Outdoor Walsh.
Outdoor Walsh. There you go.
Find me there, and then all the links are there.
Beautiful.
Let us know how you make out down east.
I certainly will.
All right. Thanks,
buddy. All right,
buddy. Take care.
Thanks, Scott.
Patrick Walsh, Editor-in-Chief, Outdoor Canada Magazine, Canada's only national outdoor product left. They're kind of like us.
Yes, sir. Read it every month. Every issue. Not every month. No. Not every month.
No. But used to be, I think, years ago. I should have asked them.
Yeah. They've changed that. Yeah. Dropped down a few issues, but... I wonder if they're going to ever have to go to sorry to interrupt there, but like the Field and Stream thing, they're already doing one or two per year or something like that.
That'd be a shame.
It would be a shame.
It'd be a shame. It really is. That might have been the most and write in and let us know if I'm right. Was that the most subdued interview we've ever done?
That's the most subdued Patrick Walsh we've ever seen.
Yes.
I
was going to make a comment.
Chill, very thought, mellow.
Yeah, like he was like chilling, man. He was good for him.
I want to be that.
One day when I grow up, I want to be him for sure, along with you, along with everybody. I want to be anybody but me.
Well, trust us. We all want you to be anybody but you as well. So just to let you know.
All right, then on that note, I think we're going to call it a day. Want to remind folks, fishingcanada.com, the gateway, the portal to your next fishing adventure, awaits you with all kinds of goodies, not the least of which, of course, is the contest. And not to be forgotten, the store.
Come on now.
With all of these wonderful, look at this thing.
Give me a hell yeah.
Look at this thing.
Look at this thing.
And the shirt's not bad either.
Exactly. On behalf of the entire crew, Volva over there behind the camera, I was going to call him Vinny. Nikki.
My cousin Vinny.
Nikki, busy doing his thing on the phone. And, of course, as we saw today, the lovely, the talented Dean Taylor.
Come on now.
Himself in a beautiful, he's got a complete ensemble going.
He's got the shirt and the hat.
He's got everything going. He's probably got the pants, the underwear, all Fishing Canada
shirts. Fishing Canada underwear. Oh boy.
And to my wonderful co-host, Peter Bowman, I'm Angelo Viola. Thanks for joining us, folks. Catch you next time.